Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 279, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Quite a milestone.
Mild stone.
It's a mild stone. It's okay, though. I think it's going to pass naturally.
Just fine.
Don't think we need the lasers.
Drink lots of fluids.
This is our first big blockbuster of the year, I guess.
We had Fast and Furious.
Fate of the Furious.
Yeah, that's true. That one
so this is our first big blockbuster that we care about.
Oh, that's also true. Maybe that's where I was getting the signals mixed.
I guess Wolverine's not a blockbuster. Logan was not a blockbuster.
It was a big hit.
When it makes money, I don't consider it a blockbuster. Like, a blockbuster is the tentpole movie that is set out to, you know.
Logan is a tentpole movie.
I think there's more wide buzz about this, like, as a early summer release, even though it's, like, pre-summer. But
This is we'll start your summer.
Yeah.
I think this is the beginning of summer movies.
Logan is not a tentpole movie.
Why?
Because I mean, that's not what they anchor
there.
It's
part of the X-Men franchise.
Yeah, but it's not the same as Godzilla or Batman or like.
I think they wanted X-Men Apocalypse to be a tentpole movie.
That did not happen.
Kong Skull
Island. That's a big old. That was a big old movie.
Yeah. That was intended to be.
That was one.
Tentpole.
Yeah, they were kind of like, let's see what happens here.
It was not like a circus tent. It was more like a Cirque du Soleil tent.
Yeah.
Yes.
Circus Flora.
It was the three rings.
Right.
It wasn't the middle one. It was one of the ones to the side.
Right.
You know?
What's going on over there?
I can't see it.
That's pretty cool. I'll go check that one out over there.
Yeah.
So let's go around the table and people can introduce themselves.
This is Dan.
This is Brian's. No, wait. This is Gio Battisi.
Oh, yeah. You showed up for this
one. I did. Yeah.
Nice. Barely.
Barely.
Oof.
Yeah.
Oof.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. So real quick, shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on iTunes. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. Don't forget, stop by the Facebook page, facebook.com/realspoilers. If you want to talk about an episode or something and have your post seen probably by more people, even though there's fewer people on that page at the moment, you should probably...
For now.
Mm-hmm. You should probably swing by our League of Show Sharers group on Facebook. That's probably your best way to actually like interact with people a little bit more dynamically.
Exactly.
So anyway, now that we've done all that, we'll have Joe dig in and start recapping the film.
First, I want to say how smart Marvel is at this point. So they have the release of Guardians of the Galaxy, right? They release it the same weekend as Free Comic Book Day. And then they also release a brand new revamped Guardians of the Galaxy comic book that with a number one issue this past Wednesday.
Huh.
So that's pretty brilliant to get all of that together. And like, because they announced the Guardians comic book months ago.
Right.
And they've just held off until Brian Bennett. So it's Greg Pak and Aaron Cooter, and it's the same team. It's the movie lineup now, which was based on not an old comic book, but not the original, which we will get into because those characters are in this movie. I will also say there are spoilers abound. So if you have not seen Guardians of the Galaxy 2, go watch it, come back, listen to us then. But I don't want to spoil anything. So this is your spoiler. Granted, I know the title. I know what we do.
Yeah.
But here's the spoiler warning for Guardians of the
it's
Galaxy.
It's also, if you ever read, I mean, if you, there's one big spoiler, and if you've read anything about it, or like, it's been revealed since a year ago. The spoiler was revealed by James Gunn a year ago.
Mm-hmm. What?
Kurt Russell?
The spoiler that...
Oh, which was impressive.
I think it's safe to say that at this point, when we talk about a Marvel movie, odds are we're going to spoil a whole bunch of them. So if you haven't seen any of the Marvel movies...
Like, the first trailer was like, Peter, I'm your father. Like, they spoiled that back...
Yeah, that was...
That was the big deal. And then he came out. He actually had a post. I remember it was like last August or something. And James Gunn on Facebook said, look, guys, I know there's a lot of you upset about this, but we also have a movie to make and to promote. We have to have trailers. And since he's such a huge part of the movie, to
did they release like a Funko Pop? Is that what it was? Like, because those Funko Pops come out.
They did one of
like
the,
they released like a promo image of him as Ego.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't remember being
there was,
related.
There was something, but I think it was the
a Lego set. Maybe
no, it was the lady, the Goldie.
Oh,
Goldie lady,
a Goldie lady.
I don't know what her name is.
But Goldie Hawn wasn't in this,
but he owned it like last August, so almost a year ago. He's like, look, guys, we have a movie to promote. We have to make the trailers interesting. He's a huge part of the movie because a lot of people were upset, like that big reveal, because the first movie, Star-Lord Peter doesn't know his father, and so that's like
a
big
mystery. Reference to his father because they're like,
I also think that
because Yondu was like, that guy was a real a-hole or something like that.
So it was a big part of it. So then for the second movie to not even come out, and for them to be like, I'm your father, it's like, well, that was a reveal that most that a lot of people thought this should be revealed in the movie. But he gave a lot of really valid points, like we have to show what this movie's about to get butts in
that's
seats,
not a
you know?
Corner like I hear what you're saying, and that's not a cornerstone of this movie.
No, I like, don't think the that, movie hinged on that reveal.
Yeah,
no, it didn't bother me.
And I will
I'd,
say that they well, they have,
and they reveal it in the opening scene of
correct
the movie. Like it's not
it's pretty quick.
Yeah.
They also
de-aged. We got another de-aging.
Oh man,
man, this
come
is so
on.
Good.
So I will say that they change. They just to get this out of the way. They tweak the who Star-Lord's dad is from the comics to this. So in the comic book version, his dad's name is Jason, and he is the king of Spartax, which is like this other. But he is an alien.
Taxation on Spartax.
It is exactly what it was. He is an alien. He's from another world, but he wasn't Ego, and he wasn't a Celestial. So like that's Look, as the comic nerd, I get it. I know that they have changed that. That's out of the way.
Okay, sure.
So, our movie opens 1980 Missouri, which was
awesome.
Great.
But did everyone have cheers in their theater?
Yes,
like,
of
the
course.
The thing is, we're in St. Louis, Missouri, so when you see a big movie, you know, a billion-dollar blockbuster movie, and it opens in Missouri.
It also helps that James Gunn is from St. Louis.
Well, right.
You know, like, he went to St. Louis University. He, you know.
Right. So, it's like, so we got that reveal in Missouri, and instantly the audience here cheers for it.
It made me hungry for DQ.
Yeah, it did.
Oh, and then it's like an
like,
old Dairy Queen. Yeah,
Dairy Queen. A Brazier store.
A Brazier. Yeah. Oh, that sounds so good right now.
So they're cruising. It's de-aged Kurt Russell.
Yes.
Amazing.
In all his glory.
It looked just like Snake Plissken.
Yeah.
Like, I think it looked younger than Snake
Plissken. I'm just,
he had that coif.
Yes.
I thought the Michael Douglas one looked better.
I agree that Michael Douglas one looked better, but this was like
this was pretty good.
I was just about to mention that. So I think this is the best since Michael Douglas. I didn't like Robert Downey's in Civil War.
Oh, I did like it.
His young looked a little weird. Like,
well,
I still don't think it was as good.
But
though.
I mean, like when they reveal what that is, like I can accept the fact that like the technology isn't there yet in their world.
I also think that Robert Downey also he doesn't look anything like Robert Downey does now.
Yeah.
So
that being
you know
a young,
I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like he's kind of when you see young Robert Downey, he like look at Weird Science.
Less,
you're
less
like
than zero.
Oh God.
Yeah.
You know, like he's one of those guys. He's aged well.
Yeah. Okay. So I when I saw this, I'm like, okay, that's like that is Ant-Man level Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
Quality.
Oh yeah. Same like
looks great.
And that 280ZX. Come on.
Come on. So good. So they're cruising down there. We are flashback. It's Peter's mom and Kurt Russell, and they're driving down the highway, and they pull off into a Dairy Queen, and they kind of like run into these backwoods, and Kurt Russell kind of shows Star-Lord's mom like this plant, and he's just like, I planted it here, and soon it's going to take over the entire thing, and it's going to be beautiful, and it's going to be perfect, and she, you know.
To the tune of Brandy.
Yeah. Okay. I cannot think, besides Tarantino, a better director who can pick music that is stellar with his movie.
I was just about to make that same point. I was going to say.
There is no director I can think of that is able to take, and not, and it's not like he's taking popular songs. Obviously, we'll get into Lakeshore Drive, which is a song based, nobody outside of St. Louis and maybe Chicago knows what that song is. And
I can tell you right now, people walking down Lakeshore Drive do not know the song Lakeshore Drive.
That is correct. Yeah, and that is a St. Louis-centric song.
It's a huge song in St. Louis.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, if you grew up listening to the rock station in St. Louis.
The oldest.
The oldest continuous rock station in the country at
this
point. It was, I mean, you heard it every day. Like, you ran into this more with rock stations in the 70s, but they would create kind of regional hits. And, and the station in St. Louis, KC95, created.
They doubled down on Lakeshore Drive.
Yeah. And they had a lot of hits that were kind of only mattered here. Moxie, Come Sail Away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the aforementioned Lakeshore Drive by Alioto Haynes and Jeremiah.
Sammy Hagar made a career
in St. Louis.
Now, obviously, people outside of St. Louis know who Sammy Hagar is, but to put it in perspective, if you're listening to this and Sammy Hagar comes to your town, he's probably playing a 2,000 or 3,000 seat venue when he comes to St. Louis, and he comes to St. Louis every GD year.
Yep.
And he will always, always, always sell 17 to 18,000 tickets.
Yep. Yeah.
Every
single time. Yeah. I don't know I don't get it. Like, I'm more Van Halen than Van Hagar,
but Sammy Hagar outside of Van Halen was fine on his own. Like, when do you have a dumb song like Three Lock Box and it's still pretty good?
Right. But you know, but the interesting thing though,
you
is
know what I mean?
People in St. Louis don't always realize this, but when they were like, oh, Van Halen has a new singer and it's Sammy Hagar, like, we were the only town that was like, oh my god, that's awesome.
Yeah,
it's
perfect.
Everybody else
is amazing.
Like, who?
No, it was like, at that point, it became supergroup.
Yeah, in anywhere else in the country, I don't think it was perceived that way until 5150 came out, and they were this is a really good record.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, so that was interesting to hear a song that is that.
That's James Gunn, though.
Yeah,
and the way he uses that song,
he writes to the music.
Yes,
yeah,
yeah.
The Awesome Mix Volume 1 was really good. Mm-hmm. Loved that selection. It worked really well in the movie. But this tells the story even better than in the first one. He uses this to its fullest potential.
Yeah, this is also a different movie. This is not the Chris Pratt show. This is not. Yeah. He does something different with this one that I did not expect.
I hate the parallel that's always drawn to a sequel being The Empire. I think this was consciously thinking in terms of that. And I explained it to one of our listeners. I was like, you know, the first Star Wars came out and it was fun. And everybody was excited. And yeah, they could do a sequel if they wanted to. But nobody was like, sequel. This one, they made this movie knowing they were going to make a sequel.
Yeah.
So they're able to take more risks and cut a little bit deeper below the surface.
I will say I could see the comparisons to Empire, and they are rightly deserved.
I'm your father.
Yeah, well, not that, but
even
like,
beyond that, the story structure in that.
Oh, it's totally there.
Everybody breaks off into individual components and has their own story that then
come back together.
Yeah, they come back together at the end in a way that you don't get in Empire. It stops right before that moment, but
it doesn't end on a dour note.
Right.
Yeah.
But they really kind of broke it up to where. They kind of all went off on their own little adventures,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't get a lot of them together, except kind of as bookends.
Yes,
and there was more risk and strife for all of them.
Yeah, there's a little bit. You don't get a lot of that in that first one because you're forming your team,
right?
And this one, your team is fully formed, so you can explore the relationships between everybody.
Yes,
and I will say the thing that I really like too is that normally when they do that, they go off on their own to have their mini adventures. It's because there's a fight.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Exactly.
And it's not what's going on here, which I like, because it's like, you can't have the first movie be like, we built this team and we're going to be great now. And then you get to the next movie and you instantly break them apart because you don't know what to do.
It was like Avengers 2.
Yeah.
And Avengers 2, there was like, why are we fighting? What's going on?
And so it was nice that they didn't go down that road, that they broke them apart in terms of space, with a lowercase s, but they didn't. They didn't have them. They weren't
break off. They give you some tension.
Sure.
Yeah. Like some,
but not like the band's about to break up.
No. Yeah. Right. Like it's
like you never felt like they were really going to be enemies.
No.
Never. It was like it was like any group of people that
like
work together.
Friends.
There's times when you're just like, oh Jesus,
God, and live together.
Right.
Much like this podcast. No. So the scene opens and just the biggest bombastic kind of way, where the Guardians, who, you know, Rocket, Drax, Gamora, Baby Groot, and Star-Lord are hired by the Sovereign to protect these batteries from this being, this big old monster that's coming down to take the batteries.
That eats batteries.
That eats batteries. Batteries, if you will.
Batteries. And I love this. This is one of my favorite
opening sequences of all time.
Like, the fact that they didn't focus on the big bombastic scene.
Yes, they let Baby Groot do the Baby Groot thing, which I thought was great.
They literally...
To the tune of Mr. Blue Sky by ELO.
Yeah, yeah, it was so good.
He got Baby Groot got the Chris Pratt open.
He did. Yes.
He's dancing along as the scene, as the movie opens instead of Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
Like, but this was a... But you know, it's like, we expected... This is the second movie. We've got our team. You're going to have this huge fight and special effects, and it's all out of focus in the background, and it's just watching Baby Groot dance.
Dude,
and it is seriously one of my favorite. When it was happening, and there was so much joy, you know, flowing through me, I'm like, this is amazing. So,
and I also, like, I think the opening credit sequence to Zombieland was my all-time favorite. Like, I love that opening credit sequence. It takes the cake.
It's
like,
for
this
me,
was great.
Zombieland is great. I do love that. But Watchmen, I just absolutely love.
Oh, Watchmen is fantastic.
That is one of the most beautiful.
Yeah. We'll dog on Zack Snyder all day long, but that opening credits sequence
gorgeous.
To Watchmen
has been my favorite of all time, and this is up there with that for sure.
Yeah,
I would go with a cheaper song. I would go with Goodfellas.
Oh, felt well played.
That opening scene in Goodfellas, like, it was when he's explaining what it's like to be a gang. Like,
That's a great scene.
That's a great
scene. That's a tracking shot.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm talking about title sequences.
Yeah.
That's kind of a title sequence.
No, this is literally just telling the titles, Watchmen, the titles, the credits. You know, not an opening sequences, because this wasn't the opening sequence. It was the title
sequence.
There's
so much going on that it feels like the opening sequence.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's an opening sequence
that the credits play over.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not.
I'm just saying, like, the Kurt Russell part was the opening sequence. This was the title sequence.
Okay.
Well,
I know what you're saying. I get, to me, it felt like a prologue.
Yeah.
So, like, I didn't, you know.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Like a recap.
Potato, potato.
Like, that's kind of what it was.
Potato, tomato.
Yeah.
It was a recap. Like, oh, yeah, these are the characters we like. Here's the snarky, you know, whatever. I did my favorite. I love the fact that Baby Groot waves.
Yeah.
And everybody has to be like, all right, hi.
Hi.
And then, like, that that got me. I saw it twice. You know.
Yeah.
That's weird, because it was a good movie.
I know. Well, if it's a bad movie, I gotta see it more than twice.
Yeah, I know. I would have thought it would be
we know.
Yeah, it's like in the very beginning, he hooks up the cords to play the music.
He's trying to figure it out, and then he clicks.
And then he starts dancing. Yeah.
Well, Rocket was like, you know, because they're all getting ready for the big fight. And they're like, Rocket's like futzing with some speakers.
Yeah, Drax is like, what are you doing? He's like, Quill wants to listen to music.
Put the tunes on.
And he's just like, that's a terrible idea. We need to do this. And Rocket's like, Star-Lord just kind of like, no, I agree with Drax. We need to focus on this.
This is awful.
And then the other guy,
Rocket just
keeps like
winking.
Yeah, right.
I can see you winking. And he was like, oh, damn it. I meant to do it with my left eye.
I will say that, honestly, just prefacing it right from the beginning here, that I do not laugh out loud at a lot of movies, but I thought this movie was really funny.
I think it's funnier than the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoyed thoroughly the first one, and I'm not even comparing this yet to it. But as far as the laughs and the jokes, I think James Gunn is really, really good.
He was
good.
Firing on all cylinders.
This is impressive.
The humor in it is something that you don't get a lot in films, especially bombastic films like that.
Yeah,
in this case, I mean bombastic is a compliment.
Sure.
Normally I don't. But that all the humor was character driven. It was almost like clearly this guy has a love for the 70s.
Yes, a little bit.
And this was like some of the best 70s sitcoms, like a Barney Miller or something.
Yeah,
and
totally.
He didn't write jokes and then shove them into characters' mouths. All the humor comes from who these characters are and how they interact with people.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so that's not something you get very often in movies. I will say you tend to get it in Marvel movies. It really, a lot of the humor does come from how Captain America interacts with Iron Man, or how Hulk interacts. You know, you do seem to get it more in a Marvel movie.
That one.
Yeah. But this really takes it to the next level. And it did in the last one as well. But I really enjoyed how so many of the laughs you could never take those laugh lines out and make them work in another movie.
No, totally.
They're organic, and they only work in this setting with these characters.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I think it's really a testament to, I can't think of another director, especially in this Marvel universe, that loves these characters and is so close with these characters as James Gunn is with them.
I think
this is such a family dynamic to him on a personal level.
I also think that
I think Whedon would fall into that category.
I'm not saying he's not a big kind of stuff. Yeah. It's not that though, but I don't hear him waxing poetic about.
I think James Gunn does have a deeper awareness and knowledge of the sort of the history of the character and the sort of world of those characters.
I will say there's a difference between I really like Captain America, I really like Spider-Man, and I really like Guardians of the
Galaxy.
Yeah. Like, you know, that's it's a much deeper cut.
So when this comic came out, like, it came out of nowhere. So it was not Marvel comic books at that time were so event driven, right? So you had like Civil War and all of this different stuff where so you're reading Spider-Man and it's tied into Civil War. You're reading Captain America. Everything's tied into Civil War. Everything all the time with the stupid banners across the top.
Yeah.
Guardians came out and they were in space. Like,
yes.
They were not tied to anything.
And I don't like the space stuff. I don't read any of it.
I don't either. Yeah. But I picked up, you know, it's one of those things where you're walking through, you're like, oh, that cover looks kind of cool. I'll check that out. And it was with Annihilation. And then it was, so that, the Annihilation miniseries kicks off. That's where you meet, you're reintroduced to Star-Lord, Drax, Groot. And they come together in that, and then they take those characters and spin them off with Nova, the Rich Rider Nova, and, you know, all these different characters. And that, I loved that comic. So when they said this was coming out, and I was like, man, like, the, you know, obviously, everybody loves Batman, right? But there are always those little niche.
Joker doesn't love
that's
Batman.
That's true. Yeah. Joker does not. There's all those. There's, you know, for me, like, I love Captain Britain.
Yeah.
I love Nova. And, you know,
this felt like they were doing the Doom Patrol or Metal Men.
Yeah.
Like, when they said they were going to do Guardians, I was like,
there are niche characters that I think everybody loves.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they announce that your characters that you love are going to be added to this massive world, you're like, man, don't.
And I think that if James Gunn didn't love these characters as much as he did and didn't have such a close dynamic with this cast as a family and related to them like that, I don't think that these movies would be as good. So he definitely pours a lot of his heart and soul into these movies.
He absolutely cares.
Yeah.
And it shows.
Oh, yeah.
I think the other thing that James Gunn has, I think, over the other directors of these films is that I think of all the directors, he's the one that is the most excited about getting to play with these toys.
I think you're absolutely right.
And I think the other ones, I have no doubt that the Russo brothers are excited. They didn't have a lot of A-list stuff on their track record. They were still pretty new, so I'm not trying to bag on them. But I think James Gunn, I think it's something about being from here, in all honesty.
This is 100% Midwestern.
Yeah.
He is a Midwestern.
That he's like,
I get to do this?
He swung for the fences, and he was excited.
And he crushed
it. He was probably happy as a pig and when he got to make Slither.
And
so now,
did you know they're in Guardians? Did you know that? If you look in the collector, like when they're walking,
are they
the little Slither things are in the?
Oh, that's awesome!
Yeah,
and but I mean, I think he was probably ecstatic. Like he was probably like, "Hey, I made it!"
Yeah,
you know. And so now that he's directing true tentpole movies and crushing it, I mean that's just something about this town.
Yeah, I would
like,
agree.
We're not, you know, we're
don't want to toot our own horn, but
no, I mean it's the whole like
fact that people from St. Louis don't become Marvel directors.
Yeah,
it just
like
doesn't happen.
You know, like there's a lot of towns that kind of have their musical sound or whatever.
Sure.
It's like we've got Chuck Berry, and then
we had Chuck Berry.
And then you wait 60 years, and we have Nelly.
Right,
and that's about it.
Yeah.
You know, like we don't have a lot. And even though a lot of the famous people that are quote unquote from St. Louis,
they
lived here for like five years.
They went to Icantina,
and then they left.
Well, it's like
what's like Icantina,
well, like Sheryl Crow or Brad Pitt. And,
yeah, Vincent Price. Like you know, like and so that's just kind of the mentality of this town of like, well, that doesn't happen to people from here,
right?
You know, and so I really think that enthusiasm, I really feel like it leaks out onto the screen.
Yeah,
it's the quirkiness. I mean, the quirkiness of Super, the quirkiness of Slither. I mean, it shows through in this. I mean, this is a guy who has lived the B movie experience.
Yeah.
And didn't, you know, he still respects it. And
he got the rub is what happened. Like he put in the time and effort on the small stuff. And people are just like, yeah, you could. Well, let's give you this. Let's see what you can do with this. And he was like, thank you. I'll take that paycheck and I'll make you money.
And also, go look at, just as an aside, go look at James Gunn's Facebook page and go look at the notes he writes and how on a personal level, how he talks about these characters and his experiences. And also, he wrote a really touching note just yesterday and relating to, he's like, I'd be lying if I wasn't looking at the box office numbers. I am, but then I remember why I made this. And I didn't make it to look at, you know, digits on a piece of paper and do this. And then he talks about
it. Added bonus.
but he's like, you know, what I really did was, you know, I was in a, you know, the suburbs and a, you know, in the Midwest, and I started making movies to escape from that. And it's just a really sweet personal note. And I've never heard other directors talk like that. And yeah. I think that's what really sets him apart. And it goes to what Tom is saying. And it's just like his upbringing and the way that he loves film and why he made it to get away from certain things in his family or where he lived. And
he's
and
very transparent with his fan base.
Yeah. It's so special. And so he's just a different kind of guy, you know, and
you talk about having fun. I'm thinking the guy who the Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Taika Waititi.
That looks,
fun.
On this level of fun. And I think, Tom, what you're saying is it looks like he's having fun while making that movie.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to translate on screen.
It does. I mean, a totally different genre.
Totally different.
But that's what made Cannonball Runs work.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you could tell they were legitimately enjoying themselves.
Yeah.
And Thor actually does look like Thor as Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what that story is going to be. I have an idea. But
it's going to tie in with the cosmic stuff.
I will, you know, say, well, it has
this
to.
But this is going to be the next step. It's going to be Doctor Strange, Guardians, and Thor.
This is so Netflix has your Marvel Knights, which is your rated R street level stuff. Then you've got your regular MCU stuff, which is all based on Earth. And then you've got that weird little cosmic thing over here. I think that's the advantage of keeping Marvel fresh, is you've got three different sections of movies and TV and anything you want.
Well, I think that's probably going to be the tweak to Thor, now that you mention it, is that Thor started off as faux Shakespeare, and I think now they're going to kind of self-correct. And those movies were
good. Fine.
They weren't great, but they were. And I'm not a Thor guy, so I walked out of those movies much more. I enjoyed them way more than I thought I was going to.
Yeah.
But I still was like, I don't know that I've ever watched either one of them again. But I think the self-correction is they're like, you know what? We can let Thor be like Guardians Light.
Yeah, and yeah. I think they're going to take advantage of Hemsworth's comedic chops.
Yeah, he is very
funny. And that whole scene where he's just like, no, I know him from what?
Yeah, they finally caught on.
Yeah, and it's kind of like Star-Lord's dad in this.
Yeah.
I get why they did it, but it's a shame we're robbed of having that movie, that moment in the theater. But I also
the reveal, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. but if you're gonna put a Hulk in a movie, you want to sell tickets. You want people to know Hulk's gonna be in this movie,
right? I agree.
But, and we don't know how much he's like. We don't know if he's gonna
could be that scene, and he's gone.
I don't think so either.
But back to
this movie. So the creature comes down. There's a big fight that ensues. They defeat the creature, and then
Drax defeats it.
Yes, single-handedly.
Again, the writing so great. It's just so funny.
I'm glad that he got more to do as well, rather than just be.
I'll tell you, brooding. Talk about a character or an actor that you would never think would be this good and in these type of roles. Dave Bautista.
I saw a critic, another critic's reviews. I can't remember who it was, but he goes, I would have never thought that Batista would become one of my favorite comedic actors.
He was great. Like the timing was on point.
Yeah.
And it's weird. Like that wasn't his character when he was a wrestler.
Right.
He was just he was the monster.
Yeah. They didn't hire him to just replicate what he did.
Right. In WWE, he was just the monster good guy who would, you know, he could pick up the Big Show or things like that. So there was never any real comedic stuff that he did. And then he does this, and you're just like, dang, dude, like, that's really funny. Like, the timing is there. The way you deliver the line is there.
And it's good because you don't really think that a professional wrestler would always be willing to kind of make themselves look stupid.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't think Drax comes off looking stupid.
No.
But I think that, like, kind of my stereotypical perception of a professional wrestler makes me think they would think, I'm going to look stupid doing insane.
I think the 80s style wrestler. Yes.
Yeah.
Like they are super, like they covet their character. Like we can't go against my character because that's not what my character would do.
This new world's a lot more media savvy. And they're like, well, how's this expand my brand? Oh, now I can go to Wizard World and they won't think I'm the guy that beat them up in high school.
Right.
And Drax, it's interesting, has kind of evolved to be a hero for kids on the spectrum.
Is that right?
Oh, yep. I didn't realize that. Makes
Absolutely.
Sense.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say when you were talking about it, because I'm like, that's more what he is. It's not that he's dumb. It's that he has...
He doesn't process...
Yeah,
metaphors.
Sarcasm.
Right.
Exactly. Sarcasm.
Because he is quite smart.
Right.
He just, it's the way he... Yeah.
I don't think the character is dumb, but like because he interacts with the world in such, in such a weird way or an unusual way, like it could be perceived as that.
It could be mistaken.
Yeah,
but,
or like he's looking foolish.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
A lot of the humor, it comes from him looking a little foolish. And I didn't... It makes perfect sense what you're saying, Dan, about him being a hero for people on Spectrum. I never saw it that way.
Yeah.
But now I'm kind of like, how can I not?
Yeah,
see
how
it
could
way?
It? It's, yeah.
But it came to the forefront with the last movie, and I think they rolled with it. They're like,
let's just do it.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
And what's great is, unlike a lot of characters that want to use that for humor, it's not offensive.
Right.
Because
it's
not about, oh, here's this character who's got Asperger's or whatever, and it's going to be a laugh riot. It's this totally other thing that kind of mimics aspects of it, but if they don't nail it perfectly,
it's just like, well, it's
nobody can come forward and say you're making fun of this disorder or whatever. Like you don't have to deal with any of that.
No.
And it's made even doubly difficult because Asperger's manifests itself in so many varied ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's not just one way to look
at
it.
So how one person with it might act is completely different from another.
Right.
And because like Dan Aykroyd talks about how he's on the spectrum, and you don't normally associate people that can do comedy as being on the spectrum, because it's about, for comedy work, you have to process people's input and emotions and react to that. And so you don't normally get comedians that are like, oh, yeah, that's me.
But I feel like comedians are on the spectrum more often than not. Or there's something else. Yeah,
I think a lot of them have stuff going on.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's spectrum stuff.
Issues.
But they got issues.
Yeah. So
back to the movie.
So they defeat the creature. They go in front of these golden creatures. This golden race of, like, they're the perfect perfects. And Star-Lord kind of says, he's like, look, they're a little touchy. So anything that they deem to be a transgression, like the punishment is death. So let's just let me deal with this and then we'll get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So they go in front of the gal. And I will say, leading into the spoiler, I looked at these people and I was like, huh, they look very similar to another Marvel character that has been talked about before in these movies.
That would be Silver?
Nope, they would be Gold. They look like Adam Warlock.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So, but and they have teased in the first one. They said, you know, they show a cocoon. And
yes.
If you know your comic lore, that's how Adam Warlock is reborn all the time.
And James Gunn has said yes.
Yeah,
that was Adam Warlock,
which is interesting considering what we find at one of the post credit sequences. I don't really know how that's going to work, but
He's a huge Warlock. I am too. I was like,
Warlock is a great character, but he's also
Adam Warlock.
He is a linchpin in the Infinity Gauntlet, the Infinity War. He's a big character that, you know. So I'm looking at this race of aliens. I was like, huh, interesting.
Well,
So
they reward them. You know, they basically are about to leave on their way, and then Rocket has to.
They reward them with Nebula. Like that's the reward. They don't want money. They just want Nebula, who comes. Karen Gillian comes back as
she was
Nebula.
Trying to steal the batteries, and they captured.
Correct. And then so Rocket, he's like,
and
yeah.
We all know there's only one reason a woman steals batteries:
to start a remote.
Yeah, for a smoke detector.
Totally.
She's very safety conscious.
Yeah.
Spring forward, fall back, change your batteries.
Right.
Everybody knows this.
Yeah, I mean, if you're on a spaceship like that and there's a fire, that's very dangerous.
What are you going to do?
You got to have your smoke detector working. I don't know what you thought I meant, you owe everyone an apology.
I didn't say that.
No. We know where you were going.
I will say, I always, you know, the explosions in space, just like... Well, it doesn't really work, it's fine.
It's like tires squealing on Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah, right. Like that. Gotta let it go. Let that part go. Yeah. So, Rocket kind of says, you know, for a bunch of self-conceited douchebags, like he gives a little thing and everybody kind of whips around and they pull him out and they're walking away. And of course, Rocket pulls up his satchel and there he's got a stack of batteries that he has stolen.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Seriously.
And I didn't think it was that bad. But then they're flying away, and Star-Lord's Peter Quill's just kind of like, we got a bunch of these, like, sentries on our back here. And he's like, why would that be a thing? And then Drax, and he's like, because Rocket stole batteries. And he was like, dude, come on. He's like, oh, Rocket didn't steal batteries. I don't know what they're doing here. That's really weird. And then, good, you know, yeah, a big old space battle ensues.
And I know it's weird at the end of this battle. So I was going to jump to the end. So they end up like killing them all, or they end up destroying all their ships,
which yeah. was, I thought, love how they fly them. To me, that is a direct shot at DC Comics, at Warner Brothers, because Rocket says, I want to kill some people, and they start blowing up ships, and then Gamora says, you're not killing anybody, they're remote accessed. Yeah. And I was like, that is funny.
Well,
like,
I thought,
that's a great line.
I thought it was weird because I interpret it as like, okay, like they don't want the movie to get too dark, they're not gonna, they don't want they don't want a lot of people dying.
You were wrong.
I was mistaken.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I was kind of like, oh, I don't know why. But I guess, yeah, they didn't have the good guys just wholesale slaughtering.
But the arcade noises, I mean, that was so
great.
Awesome. That
what game was that? That was
I thought it was Galaga.
Yeah,
Galaga?
That's what it was. Okay.
The game that Star-Lord's playing on the...
No, well, when
that was
like mini football.
When they're in the pod shooting.
Well, okay, so the thing at the beginning was digital football.
Yeah, right.
Like, I had
one of those
kid.
As well, yeah.
Like, those were... That was what a video game was.
That was an old Game Boy.
When Dan and I were growing up. That's
what... There with
you? No, your parents.
You got a hand-me-down version.
So that's also so true. I had to wait for like the Tiger.
You
whatever,
bought ours at a garage sale when we moved on to Atari 2600s. So that's what that was. I instantly was like, I had that.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I was like, I knew it was a game.
Was,
like I was like,
I'm pretty sure it was Galaga
a million times.
So funny the noise.
Or
like
Galaxian. It was one of those two.
Yeah. So they're cruising through and they're winning, but the entire time Guardian. Star-Lord and Rocket are fighting back, and they have to get to this quantum field of like these meteors that like bounce in and out of
I hate
existence.
This in movies, and I don't mean it ruins the movie, but I'm just like, oh, you know it's not going to end well. I hate it when the two people butt heads, and it's like, and Gamora is like, me, it's my thoughts, where she's just like, you guys are idiots, and because she says this after they end up crashing because of it, but they're fighting back and forth with the controls. I'm like, well, either one of you would have done a better job than both of you
fighting
it.
Over it.
And
yeah.
Gamora says the exact same thing. They end up crash landing. They hit a bunch of stuff.
They get through and they make it through. But as they're clearing the field, they realize that the Sovereign's ships have gone around the field and they are cornered.
Whoops.
And they are getting waylaid. And then all of a sudden, here comes a little one-inch man.
A little one-inch man on a little...
He's like, what do you mean? He's like, well, if he maybe was closer, he was, you know, he'd look taller. He's like, that's how eyesight works.
Yeah. That's so, Drax for people that we didn't say. Drax is like...
They're going
there
back
was
and
a man.
Forth.
There's a little...
Yeah,
like
it looks like somebody
man.
Riding a space bean.
Yes,
on,
and just waving.
You know, using like a... Yeah, waving. and like riding it like a horse at the rodeo.
Yes, yeah. So he destroys all of the ships in one shot. So they make it through these jumps, which actually I like these portal jumps rather than being like, just kick the light speed and we'll go to the next one. There are portals that they have to go through, like little jump ports.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to this other planet, like Brexum or something. They crash land and they have
Brexit.
A little... not Brexit. Yeah. They have their little throwdown where Gamora's just like, if you would have flown with what's between your ears, what's between your legs, like we would have... Either one of you would have gotten us through that just fine. It's like, well, if I would have flown with Star-Lord, if I would have flown with what was between my legs, like...
He said, if what was between my legs
had a hand,
I would have done it.
Yeah. Great. Again,
which
the
is,
writing
like,
is so
one
good.
Of my favorite lines from the first one is where Gamora gets on the ship for the first time, and she's like, Quill, your ship is disgusting. He's like, man, you put a black light in here, it looks like a Jackson Pollock painting. Like, I loved that line. Mm-hmm. So that lot, I appreciated that one as well. So they're getting their stuff together. All of a sudden, here comes the ship, and it lands, and it opens up, and there is Mantis and Kurt Russell. God love him, Kurt Russell. Like that
national
dude
treasure.
Yeah,
Kurt Russell.
Come on,
he is so
good.
He is so good in everything, and he is so good in this. Like,
I will
man.
Say, so Stallone is in this. And I feel like there's a missed opportunity to have Kurt Russell
a
and Stallone, a Tango
reunion.
And Cash reunion on screen. Could have just been like a passing.
Hey.
Yeah. Or just like they cross paths, you know, or somebody said hey. Food bar.
But they do jump back and forth. And so like, I guess even wasn't this even before this that they've gone to the planet where Yondu is with the Ravagers.
Yeah, we see the Ravagers.
And I actually liked Stallone in this role. Like I thought he did a good job.
So he is one of the original Guardians. Yeah. Like that's if you look at the original Guardians lineup from the first issue of the comic book, you see they're all here.
Yeah.
So, like, that's...
As was Yondu.
Yeah, Yondu was one of the original ones, and other characters that I'll talk about later
yeah.
are all the original Guardians. And then I'm like, oh, that's a deep cut even for me. Like, yeah. That's, you know... Because that comic was not very good.
But talk about given more to do, Yondu. I mean, that,
oh, yeah.
this character is... They expand on his character. I mean, in the first one, it's a funny character, and you're introduced to him, and you don't mm-hmm. see him for a long time. You see him for a little bit. But, like, this goes really heavy into his story, and so they're at, like, a stop.
It's like an outpost.
Yeah, an outpost, and they're at a bar, and you see that the Ravagers are kind of getting sick of Yondu letting Star-Lord Peter go, you know, because they're like, you know, no matter what he does, no matter how much he screws us over, you always let him go, you know. So we kind of get that insight, and then Stallone's character comes, and he's a Ravager, and you can tell
Stardock or something is his name.
And so basically you see that as soon as he shows up, he's like, oh, we're leaving, we're getting out of here, they've lost,
he's like,
our
because
business.
Yeah, because you've served this one group of Ravagers. There's 100 yeah. different factions of Ravagers.
Yeah.
Because you serve that one, you've lost yeah. the business of 99 of them.
Michael Rooker as Yondu gets a lot of dramatic yeah. acting. I mean, this is a lot of emotional stuff, and he chases mm-hmm. after him, and we don't know what he did yet, but he's like, I didn't know it wasn't...
Yeah. Well, sorry, I mean, Stallone even says, he's just like, look, we have one rule, and we don't deal in kids, and you broke the rule.
Yeah.
And he's like, right. if you think I wanted to exile you, like, if you think that's fun for me, you're wrong. Like, yeah. I didn't want to do that. But she's like, you left me no choice.
Yeah.
So
it's a heart-wrenching moment. Yeah. You know?
And we know that, and we saw bits and pieces of that from a different angle in the first movie, you know, how Peter was, you know, grew up with the Ravagers, and he always threatened to eat them. And, you know, like, always said the crew was going to eat them, and he stopped them, and, like, the whole thing.
Like,
and we didn't hear reference to the dad
Kurt
in the first
goes,
movie.
Hey, we're going to eat you? That's gross.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I really liked this element. I mean, Yondu, he is front and center. Like, they cut back and forth between the Guardians and yeah. Yondu quite a bit. And
yeah, they gave him so much more to do. I kind of felt like, well, there must be a reason why.
I wonder why they're giving him so much
story,
to do.
Yeah, his story was definitely
I will say that they
on.
Give him the new Finn, which is, that looks just like he did in the comics.
Yeah.
Like, that was very...
I was
so,
happy to see it.
Yeah.
So we know there's something going on there that we're going to learn more about the history of
right.
Yondu.
So we're introduced to Kurt Russell, who we don't know. He calls himself Ego from the get.
Yeah.
And Mantis.
Subtle.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
A little bit. So they're all sitting down at the campfire, and they're kind of all telling stories, and Ego is just kind of like, look, like, I had to leave. I didn't want to leave, but I want to be your dad. When I heard about a human who was able to hold an Infinity Stone, he's like, I knew it had to be my son. So I've been mm-hmm. looking for you ever since. So he's like, there's a very touching moment. And then out of nowhere, he's like, I gotta take a whiz.
Yeah.
And like, he gets up and walks away. And this is where you get a little bit of the Gamora and Peter Quill. The fact that he referred it to Cheers
yeah.
was pretty spot on. Mm-hmm. Like, do they get together in Cheers? Are they ever together?
Sam and Diane.
Yeah. They
yeah.
are.
Yeah. It's like all of season two they're together.
Okay.
Yeah.
But does it last long? Is it just
she
a season?
Left. That's why I said all of season two.
But I mean, like, oh, she does leave. That's right.
She left the
yeah,
show.
And then, she leaves the show.
And then Kirstie Alley.
Fifth or sixth season.
And then Kirstie Alley comes in.
So first season is will they, won't they? Second season.
They will.
They do. And then they break up at the end of the second season. And then Frasier comes in.
Okay.
Third season. Mm-hmm. And then it's about her and Frasier. And I think... when they get back together in the fourth season, I feel like there's a period of time where they get back together.
I don't know.
And then
Kirstie Alley comes in.
And then whenever she leaves, Kirstie Alley comes in, and she's kind of the will
one.
They won't do. But I don't.
It never felt like they will.
Yeah, like they started to go down that road, and I think you could tell it just wasn't working.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, we don't need a Diane
2.0. Isn't that last episode where, like, Sam's closing the bar?
Well, Diane comes back for the last, I think, two episodes, maybe three.
Yeah.
And they think, and it builds to, like, are they going to get back together and get married?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I do love the pop culture references. So the thing that Star-Lord always harkens back to is he only knows what he knew when he was on Earth. From before he got abducted,
right?
Yeah. So you know, he's
Knight
got
Rider,
his cassette tapes, his TV shows, and I just love that they keep going back to that. It's a really funny moment, and again with James Gunn's writing and love of pop culture, it's cool that he keeps shoving these things in. And Star-Lord only deals in pop culture from before,
right? You know? The line is like, Gamora's like, you told me this story about how you thought your dad was. And she gets the name wrong completely.
Something like, Hasselhoff in the talking boat.
And he was like, David Hasselhoff? And it was Knight Rider. It was a talking car. They fought crime. So he's like, I told you that when I was drunk. Why are you bringing that up now? She's like,
I love that story.
And like she's holding his hands, and in the first one, obviously there's some sort of attraction maybe from Quill's end, and this one they open it up a little bit that like, oh, she's definitely into him as well. But they never.
Well, it's something unspoken.
That's a but yeah,
it's an unspoken.
Which
it's
is good. Like that's a great thing. Line.
Yeah.
Like that
yeah.
when they finally deliver that line, he's just like, "So if you don't say that you do, that means you do." Like I.
Yeah.
So she was just like, "Maybe we should give this a chance. Maybe we should just go with him to his planet and check it out. And if he's wrong, we'll kill him."
Hmm. Yeah.
Very simple
good strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Quill who's sort of reluctant. So they decide to go.
This is where you get a little bit of tension between Quill and Rocket, where he's just like, all right, man, like we'll see. You in a, it's not going to be long. And he was like, hope your dad's not as big enough as big of a d- as you are. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, are you actively trying to get me to hate you? Because it's working.
Rocket, this entire movie is just actively a D-bag. Like he is just, he's trying so hard and people are just like, I don't get it. Like it's the difference between your friends joking around and then someone just being like mean for
somebody
no reason.
Somebody just takes it too far.
Yeah. And so Rocket is constantly doing that and characters keep calling him out like, dude, like what? What are you doing?
And I appreciate that they gave a CGI'd raccoon a character arc.
Yes.
Like, you know, like it wasn't just, he wasn't just there for comic relief. They gave everybody something to do.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And that's the advantage of this movie is like, I think they could have gone down. It's the Peter Quill show and everybody around him is just,
and it would have been the easy route to take.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And, but you know, the other Pratt stuff could have done it.
It was funny. Cause the other stuff was so good. I was never like, I want more Star-Lord.
But and, no, I agree. Right.
Even though I really enjoyed that stuff when it was there.
And when we get back to him, you're like, oh yeah.
But okay, I never felt like I wasn't, I never felt like the other stuff was wasting my time.
I agree.
I enjoyed Rocket and Yondu.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think that was one of my favorite parts.
I think
the
they were great together.
Yeah. Like, and it took two characters that, you know,
blank slates.
Yondu was, you know, a little less dimensional in the first movie, and Rocket was, you know, definitely abrasive. So, and they took
Rocket
them further, and
killer,
you're
kind
of, but
you know?
But they. They sort of get to the heart of why.
What you're doing, but, go ahead.
Again, like, this is classic 70s, 80s sitcom writing.
Yep.
And again, not an insult.
Nope.
Like, but that's where the...
It's
the
classic 80s action movie, too.
Well, it's also, it's where the organic humor comes from. It's like, let's take two characters that don't normally cross paths and figure out a reason to put them together.
For them to cross paths.
And then they even do the thing that they would do on sitcoms where they would find a way to lock those two characters in a space together.
Right.
I mean, they did it on MASH where, you know, where there was one where Trapper and Hot Lips got locked in a supply closet. There was another one where Hawkeye and Hot Lips
were
under fire. And that was intense. That was a really intense, dramatic episode where the Trapper one was less so.
Lighthearted.
Yeah, a little bit more lighthearted, but
you got to understand their characters,
right? And why their characters,
why they were there, where they were,
treating
they were
each other the way they did,
yeah.
And so
like, this one, I think this one gives you the opportunity to actually care more,
right,
about these characters than be like, oh yeah, it's Rocket, like he'll,
right,
yeah. You know.
But and I would say the same thing with Nebula.
Nebula,
yeah.
What a, like we. We talked about it kind of in the Fast 8 episode where they rehab Jason Statham's character.
Yeah.
Like in this one, she's a hero.
Yeah.
Like she is the second villain in the first one, and she's a full blown guardian at this point.
Yeah.
Like, okay, maybe not full blown,
but she's definitely,
she's pretty close.
She has redemption in this.
She's getting there.
And you also understand
why she's made the choices she
correct.
Has.
Yes. They give you a reason to care about like a character who was like, no, kill her. Like, yeah, she's awful. They make you care about Nebula when she gives that speech about why she is the way she is.
Yeah.
So this is where the team splits up. Rocket and Baby Groot stay behind. Rocket's fixing the ship, and it's Gamora and Quill that go to the planet with Ego.
It's Drax, Gamora, and Quill, and then on the ship it's Nebula, Baby Groot,
and Rocket. And
so
the Ravengers have meanwhile been contacted by the Sovereign, and they say, hey, you know, we want you to hunt these guys down because they've screwed us over. And so Yondu and the Ravengers are going after Quill.
Right.
I guess Rocket. But, you know, they're going after the Guardians. So they're on this planet fixing the ship, and a really, really fun scene.
Great scene.
I thoroughly
enjoyed. With another great song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, like, the music constantly is so good. But Rocket's fixing the ship, and he's set up all these little traps. And so it's just a really fun scene where there's like hundreds of Ravagers.
Yeah, and he's taking them all out.
Yeah, and he got clever ways to detonate things and to put things on them.
Launch them into the air.
Yeah,
you get this scene in the trailer. Like, this is one of the scenes in the trailer that you get. And then, so they finally, Rocket is out of tricks. Yeah. He's cornered by Yondu and Sean Gunn. And they just kind of, he's like, look, just, I'll tell you where the batteries are. Just don't hurt baby Groot.
Right.
Yeah.
And Yondu's like, you know what? Just give me the batteries.
Yeah, we'll just, these are worth so much money.
And of course, the other guy who was leading the mutiny is like, whoa.
Taserface.
I was going to save that.
But this is the last straw. So we saw back on at the outpost, this is when the Ravagers were like, this is getting ridiculous. And this is the last straw when, again, he's about to let him go. And it's Sean Gunn, actually, as Kraglin.
His buddy, who is just...
Kraglin actually speaks up, and he says, that's not right. Captain,
right,
and he actually calls him out, and this is his like first mate, so like you wouldn't expect he would do it, but he's just like, you keep doing this, and you care about them more than us. Who
they're arguing over a 250,000 units, and the one guy's like, what can we do for, you know, a fourth or a third of the money? He's like, no, a quarter is 25. We can't do anything for 25 units, and everybody's like, stop. So you know, Nebula at this point is talking to baby Groot, and she's like, you gotta let me out there. They're gonna kill him. They're gonna kill your buddy, so we gotta go. So of course, baby Groot being a baby, like, that's, they also, they don't make him Groot that we see from the first one.
He's not tough Groot who's tiny.
He's baby Groot.
He's literally like a baby, a toddler.
Yes. Yeah, correct. Yeah. Which leads into another great post-credit sequence.
Yeah.
So
Nebula gets free.
And she shoots Yondu in the back of the head and, like, cuts his fin off and knocks him out. So they capture Baby Groot and Rocket and Yondu. And now the Ravagers have taken over and they're on the ship.
Yeah, so.
And this is where we get, you know, there's a need for a change. And the name of that leader is Taserface. And Rocket's just like, time out. Your name is what?
Yeah.
And he's like, Taserface. And he's like, can you shoot tasers out of your face? No. What do you do? It's metaphorical. And like, they, you know, it was a great little scene.
I just had like the follow up. A metaphor for what?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. The right. It's really fun writing. It's smart the way they did it. So yeah, now it's like,
this is a kind of dark scene though. Cause like, they're killing the Ravagers who were on Yondu's
side. This is tough. This is really tough.
You think
so.
They've killed one, and then they push them out of an airlock, and the camera kind of pans to the side, and there's like 100 different floating,
floating
in space. I can't think of that guy's name, the Irish guy.
They take basically half of the crew out. So the half of the crew that sticks around,
bad guys.
They're bad guys now.
Yeah, they're all bad guys. With the exception
of
Sean
Ravagers,
Gunn.
But they're
bad.
These are the bad Ravagers.
Sean Gunn is the only one who's left who has, you know.
But luckily,
not a bad guy.
Since he spoke up, they spared him because he's the one that kind of started the mutiny.
They think he kind of is the meanest.
So when Nebula kind of says, like, look, stop killing them. We need, there's probably, hundreds of thousands of bounties on Yondu's head. We need Rocket for whatever, I don't remember why. So they throw them in the jail. They're messing with baby Groot, which was, I guess they kept saying, so I didn't realize what they were saying on the first viewing. Second viewing, they're chanting mascot.
Yeah.
I didn't know
that. That's why they put him to the tailors, because they want him to be their mascot.
So I will say, in the comics, Groot does end up wearing like a guardian suit.
Yeah.
Like, he's wearing, like, you know, it's kind of weird to watch him wear a suit, but he does. So I appreciated the fact that they kind of do a nod to him wearing the guardian suit.
But what, for a little CG character, though, have you ever felt such a range of emotions? I mean, he's so cute and he's so fun.
Well,
and
even when they asked, you know, they're like, you're not really going to kill him, are you? And he's like, no, he's adorable.
He's adorable. Yeah, they get that. They put that out of the way. Get that out of the way right away. But when they're pouring beer on him and he looks so sad, like, I don't know a time that I've actually cared so much. And that the point. No, but about a little CG character, like, everyone is like, baby Groot is the mascot of this movie, you know.
Oh,
like,
totally.
Look at the marketing, look at everything, look at why they set this movie in the time period they did, so he could be a baby after the first one, right?
Yeah.
So this is the only movie that isn't set in present day of the release of the films.
What do you mean?
No, this is set months after the release of Guardians 1.
Oh,
I
see what you're saying.
This is the only movie out of
release
of the films, so that's why they have to catch up quick.
So wait, what are you trying to say? It's out of sync.
This movie is set in the past, whereas every other movie is set in the year that it's released.
It's set in the past of the story that the Marvel universe is currently telling.
So you're saying
because it takes place, if the last one came out, you know, 3 years ago,
right?
And this one takes place a few months after it. Yeah. But the rest of the Marvel movies
are sequential. So I see what you're saying. Okay.
It's just difficult to really tell because it's not interacting with the Marvel universe.
You don't know what's going on Earth while the Guardians.
It doesn't really necessarily
which
matter.
Which I think is a brilliant strategy for this.
Yeah.
It goes back to those comics. Like, yeah. They had no idea what was going on Earth. Yeah.
Right. Why would they?
Yeah.
But that's the whole point, is that they had to keep it tight so that he would still be Baby Groot.
Right. I see what you're saying.
And we'll fast forward later.
Yeah.
So,
well, we should probably get into the meat of the father-son
so we
dynamic.
Get but go back to Ego's home planet and we find out that he is a Celestial, which is the Nowhere, which is one of the main set pieces in the first one, is the head of a Celestial. Well,
yeah.
This Kurt Russell's character Ego is also one, which means that Peter Quill is also a Celestial. He's like, he starts laying out like this plan, and Gamora is kind of on the fence. She's like, man, I don't know, like, there's no other people on this planet. And Mantis kind of says, why would a dog invite fleas? And I was like, why are you referring to other things? Like, mm-hmm. That's to me where I was like, the cracks starting to show, where I was like, you're referring to other things as like bothersome insects. So we find out that Peter also has like these powers that he had no idea that he had.
And Kurt Russell seems very happy.
Yeah,
when he can
do it, which like that
can muster some of that,
much like
up.
Get Out.
Yeah,
that plays two different ways. Yeah. Right. So the first viewing, you're like, of course, his dad's happy that his son can do it. Second viewing, you're like, oh.
So does he have powers, or does he only have powers because he's on that?
He only
planet?
Has powers because he's on the planet.
Okay.
Yeah, like since
that's
he's
how I took
the core of that world, the light,
fuel source.
He can manifest those powers there.
Right, and he can't somewhere else.
You know,
well, he might be able to at some point, but it takes a long time.
I interpret it as if he charged up, he could go, because his dad says he has to keep coming back to kind of refuel.
Yeah, and you know, his dad, you know,
is
the whole reason for looking for him was because he heard of someone who could handle that Infinity Stone.
Human held the Infinity Stone.
That's good breeding.
That's good breeding. So he kind of says, he's like, I traveled the world. I was looking for a purpose. I found it, and you are part of it. Like, I fell in love with your mother, but I had to go. So the entire time,
via these sort of like weird stations of the
cross.
I
liked those a lot. Like, that was super weird.
But we saw it at the beginning, and it sort of plays as a very innocuous, sweet story of love and how he had to leave.
Right.
And that was his son. And then we get the sort of expanded edition of the stations of the cross.
It's
all over the
when
place.
When they stop at that first one, and like, you can tell there's more to that story, but they skip over that, because he's like, tell me about the part where we met my mom.
Right.
He moves on, and you're like, I knew that first one. Yeah. There's something else.
So then we see Gamora is off doing her, like, she's walking around. She's pissed off because obviously there's something going on between her and Peter that she doesn't want to deal with or can't emotionally deal with. There's a scene where Drax and Mantis are having a conversation, and Drax kind of shares an emotional moment. Of course, one of the things I liked about that is Drax shows nothing.
Right.
Like, he is stone cold, no emotions. So Mantis's power is she can touch people and feel their emotions. So she touches Drax and just breaks down.
Yeah.
Like, and it's something, the way that they both play it, where Batista is just kind of, you know, doesn't show anything.
Right.
And she is crushed. Like, that's the something that Batista or Drax is walking around with all the time. That is something that he deals with, but
we never see it.
But we never see it.
It's cool.
So she's about to tell him something, and then Gamora walks out and, you know, doesn't. And I was like, oh, they're going to be like, oh, I like you. But that isn't the case.
No, I mean, because the whole time, you know, something fishy is going on. You have that feeling. And she was about to warn him of something.
Yes.
And so it was right then. And then, of course, Gamora breaks and she hears it, but doesn't allude to it quite yet. But
right. So that Gamora has her and Peter have a fight. Well, not a fight. Just a
disagreement.
Yes. Yeah. So she's kind of sitting out by herself in this desert kind of area. Another scene that I thought was very funny were these two little, like, blades of grass are rubbing together, and because of her bionics, she can hear it, and she just like cuts them, and she's like, oh man. And then all of a sudden, here comes Nebula with a ship. We didn't even talk about that scene with her and Sean Gunn, where it's just like, what are you gonna do with your share? And she goes onto this long awful tirade about what this is. What, yeah, we get an idea.
Track down her dad.
Well, we get an idea of what
track down Thanos
of what happened to her. She's like, I'm going to kill my sister because she constantly, you know, every time I lose, he replaced something of metal, and he's just like, yeah, I thought you were going to say something like a pretty necklace.
Yeah,
and
show other ladies and go, ooh.
Yeah, and he like touches her on the shoulder. He's like, all right, see ya. And like walks away. So they have a big old fight. This is actually kind of a cool scene where the ship that she's in, which looks like the Milano, crashes, and mm-hmm. part of the gun breaks off, and Gamora picks up this giant Gatling gun and like fiddles with it a little bit and then just unloads and shoots. And
I thought Nebula was gone. I thought that's how they're getting rid of this character. I mean, because she shoots to kill. I mean, oh, she's trying to blow up that thing. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, she's gone. Yes. Like, she's had enough of her crap, because Nebula keeps trying to kill Gamora, and Gamora lets her go or whatever. Right. It doesn't kill her. She spares her. And I thought at this point, she was like, no, none of
that's
this.
It.
I'm ticked off.
Game over.
Yeah. So, but she ends up saving her, even though the thing is on fire, because she just. Yeah.
But she's also part of robotic. So, you know, she's just hot. Like to the touch. I don't want to.
Yeah,
no misogyny in there. But Karen,
you could be attracted to a robot.
Yeah,
it's all right, man.
It's only a matter of time. They have this interaction where they both go back and forth, and Gamora's like, "I didn't want," or Nebula's like, "I didn't care. Like, I just wanted a sister." And you're just like, "Oh, dang it! Now I care about Nebula."
Yeah.
So they're trying to get out of there, and they see this bright light, and they're walking down in these caverns in this planet, and they discover.
Some stuff.
A mass grave of just skeletons. And I like the look on Nebula's face where she's just like, we got to get out of here.
What else would be in a mass grave?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Puppies?
It would just be puppy skeletons.
That's true, yeah.
It'd still be skeletons.
There was all sorts of skeletons.
There were skeletons all different. And I was actually
saying, if it's a mass grave, it's going to be skeletons. Yeah,
that's a good point.
If it was a mass grave filled with like...
Pac-Man games?
Yeah, then it would just be... A big hole.
A big hole.
With Pac-Man.
This is the scene where I was looking for Easter eggs, because I was like, I wonder if there's going to be
skeleton.
Like a skeleton. Like, you know, like an alien. Like in...
Skeletor.
Yeah. What was the... Oh, was it Predator 2? Where like the alien skull is on the Predator
ship.
Love
that part of the movie.
Yeah. So I was looking, and I didn't really see anything. Who knows? I'm sure there's something in there. I haven't
heard
there's
no doubt.
There always is. So they go, Gamora and Nebula get out of there, and they attack Mantis, where she... Gamora grabs... There's another very funny scene where Mantis wakes up Drax, and he was just like, I don't like you that way.
Right. And his description of how she's ugly, but it's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
It's
yeah.
Good thing.
Yes.
Yeah. He's acting like he's throwing up. Ooh. He was like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm picturing us being intimate together. So Gamora runs in and kind of throttles her, and she was like, what the frick is going on here? And Drax is like, yeah, we are. I already know. Like, we got all the information. So this is the other. This is where Peter gets the secondary tour, where he finds out, you know, that Ego has been trying to graft his DNA to all of these different races, and nothing ever took. Like, nothing. He couldn't
because
figure it out.
He's been planting things on planets so he can take over planets, and he needs somebody to help him kind of fuel
that. It's too
that.
Big. It's too big of a task for one
and
celestial.
So he's been going around breeding with all these
but
different
if there's
races.
Two, and we'll say there's a great comic called Invincible that's ending that has a very similar tone. Like, they would send a representative from their race to different planets, and then they would indoctrinate that planet, and then that race would take over. I was like, oh, that's kind of a good...
Infiltrate?
What did I say?
Indoctrate?
Infiltrate, yeah, sorry, yeah.
Well,
I put words together.
Wasn't even a word.
you're right.
Yeah.
It's all right.
So that on his PowerPoint with all the different aliens that he slept with, like, remember?
Which is, it's also like a very funny throwback to Pete, right? Like in the first one where he was like, you see that scar? Like, that's from an Oscomerian, and this is from, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I liked that.
It was really funny when they show, because on those little stations, it's like, you know, they show Ego's character, you know, and they're all just kind of like minimalist characters. Yeah. But then they just show all these weird aliens
flipping. Like,
and there's more and more and more.
And
I thought it was funny to show like all the different ones that like he never changed, but it was all
slowly,
these weird
though, like the facade of Ego is you're like,
what's going on?
Think I like
more,
this
a
guy.
A little bit more id.
Well, yes. Yeah. So he says, he's like, I found life, and it was disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, the turn.
Yeah.
Of course. I was like, come on, Kurt Russell. Just be a good guy.
Nope.
Not in this
not
one.
Not the case. All this time is going on. Now Rocket and Yondu have escaped. And yeah. they are
we
coming.
Should talk about this awesome scene. I mean, I don't want to skip over this. This is one of the coolest.
He gets his fin.
Getting the fin was great.
It's
like,
funny.
Where he's telling Groot, he was like, it looks like this. This is what it is. And like he brings back underwear and different
stuff. And a weird alien, which is funny. But he finally brings him the fin and it's on. Once he gets the fin and he can control the arrow, it is just this.
He kills all of them.
Every single Ravager except for, you know, Kraglin is dead.
Yeah.
And so when Tom was talking about be afraid of killing people. This is, I'm sure, what you're referring to.
The body count at this point.
Hundreds. Was people floating.
The people floating.
But the people floating, you don't see. It's off camera until then you see
them
just
that
dead.
They're dead. You
right. see Yondu killing hundreds.
I am waiting for the DC nerds to just be, the DC movie nerds, who are just like, oh, you had a problem with that, but you don't have a problem with this.
But they
like,
gave
they were aliens and they were bad guys.
They were bad guys.
And they just murdered all the good guys.
They murdered all the good guys.
And they're
so,
not, these aren't characters who've built 60 and 70 year careers based around the fact.
Right. 80.
It wasn't Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it was an awesome.
Well, yeah, it wasn't Jimmy Olsen. Exactly, Dan.
So this
well played, Dan.
So this is a very stylized scene, though. So the arrow is red and has a trail and the lights go down. And it's just really cool with the music and the lights and everything. So visually, I think it was one of the really neat scenes. And then what they do is they slow it down. You know, they film it in high frame rate and they slow it down. So bodies are falling around Yondu and Rocket as they walk like over a bridge.
Yeah.
And it's really neat.
You get
scene.
Baby Groot getting revenge on the guy who poured a beer on
him.
Yeah. That scene you get in the trailer. There's a scene where the arrow knocks out all the lights.
Yeah.
And all you get is the arrow.
Yeah, it was
like,
beautiful.
Flip it around. Oh man, that was.
I
awesome.
Just think visually, that's probably my favorite scene of the movie.
If there's,
they played with you could tell they were just having a good
it was
time.
Fun,
yeah,
just if having some fun with it.
If there's that,
but fun for
but
everybody.
Actual having fun, yeah.
but and fun yeah. for everyone.
Fun for everybody, yeah.
But
so
not the bros,
not the bros.
Bruh. Yeah.
There is no that bra. Yeah. I will say if Marvel ever mucks up and lets James Gunn go, that's your Green Lantern director. Like that's the guy. I don't know how.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Want to go do it again?
I don't
he
know.
Probably wouldn't. But
yeah.
I mean, I think he'd be like, "I've already made that movie."
Yeah,
yeah, it's probably true. That's a good point.
Well, he's finally gonna be able to make his favorite character. So
that's true. Yeah.
So back on Ego.
During this, he's given him like this sort of cosmic vision, so he can share in what
head.
He's been planting seeds, literally for.
Yeah, literally
well,
and figuratively.
And he like
and then he says something.
Yeah. So he kind of says he's just kind of like. Peter is under this sort of like hypnotic thing and he's just like,
and he's starting to, you think maybe
he says,
Peter's
he's like, what about my friend
on board with this?
He is on board until
he's like, I see it.
Yeah.
I
he sees it. Everything. And then he's like, what about my friends? He's like, yeah, that's the human side of you. And then he says, what about my mom? He's like, if you have all this power, why couldn't you save my mom? And he was just kind of like, I loved your mother. Like I came back to Earth 3 times for your mother. And I knew if I came back a 4th time, I would never leave. He's like, it killed me. To put that brain tumor in your mom. And I was just
and
like,
is that the-
I go, it's Lethal Weapon 2.
Yeah.
Like, this is every 80s action movie. And I'm not saying that in a bad way.
No.
Like, they give you more info. Like, in the first one, you just know that Riggs' wife is dead.
Yeah.
She was in a car accident. In the second one, they're just like, oh, by the way, she was murdered by this South African, you know, whatever.
Diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, diplomatic has been revoked.
But what I liked about that is that. They didn't go the route of having Peter go, what?
Oh, he snaps out of it immediately.
The reaction's like, very unexpected and very cool. I like that
we
he
have
just
seen this
him.
Recently, though, right? Like, didn't we just talk about this?
Well, we're getting like this villain, more and more where the villain's trying to talk and then
the
person's
monologuing. No.
You got me monologuing.
But so what do you think that was? Was it his ego? Was it his... I mean, why did he say that to him? Like,
I think he had him. I think he thought he had
him. Because he thought he had him.
Yeah.
And
I think to
him... But why even say it, though? I'm just curious.
He's
what
monologuing.
He thought,
yeah, he was being the supervillain.
He just doesn't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just thought that, like, that, like yeah, it sucks, but, you know, we're gods. What you going to do?
What are you going to do
and
about
I
it?
Think in his mind, he's like, if you're basically immortal, you know, you were going to outlive her anyway.
Right.
So,
right.
Okay, I cost you, you know, maybe 30 years of your of having a mother, but you're going to live for millions of years. So you're really, it's like she died 3 days early.
Yeah.
So it's Sean Connery telling Christopher Lambert, it's like, you're immortal.
Don't fall in love.
Yeah.
Like, it's not gonna work.
Yeah, that's kind of what I gathered, that it was just like.
Because he kind of said the same thing about his friends. He's like, yeah, but your friends, it's going to be like a blink and they're gone.
Right.
The difference is amazing,
millions.
You know? Well, that was the wrong thing to say to Star-Lord.
Yeah, so Star-Lord.
In retrospect, it was ill-advised.
Yes, he snaps out of it immediately and just starts firing both of his guns and like, you know, he. dissolves Ego's Kurt Russell form.
Mm-hmm.
And Kurt Russell is a great scene where Kurt Russell's like, I tried to do everything to make you like love. I don't know what he's, but he turns into David Hasselhoff, and David Hasselhoff does a little bit of a monologue, and I was like, all right, I'm cool with that. Like, yeah. I like David Hasselhoff.
Fun.
He's fun. And then he's like, if you're not going to join me willingly, I'm just going to do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses, so
I like as he was regenerating though, again, visually,
that's
you
a
know?
Good, there's two times where that looks fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, cause he's like rebuilding his body with the muscles right. and the skeletons walking around and everything. Right. And so I just thought visually again, this movie was mm-hmm. looked very good. I mean, this is a great looking movie. The CG was very, yeah.
They put a little money in it.
Yeah.
Just they opened up the bank.
Yeah. The Disney bank.
Yeah.
So
they let James Gunn basically do the Scrooge McDuck dive into the
That's exactly
the money pool.
So he what you should know about Ego is his name in the comics. Now, I know very little about Ego other than what he looks like. He's the Living Planet. So
he's a Living Planet, but I had same thing.
Yeah, I know.
Like, did you read up on him at all?
No, not at all.
I had read that he's been, you know, sort of ambiguous.
Yes. He's kind of like the Watcher, if you will, who is another certain character that we see. What a great, brilliant move on James Gunn's part.
Yeah.
There's a scene where Rocket and Yondu kind of fly, like, port in, and they see what Ego actually looks like in the comic books.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's the face on the planet.
Yeah, they show
what Ego looks like, and I was like, well done.
It's cool.
Like, that is awesome. That is great.
Yeah.
I think he was in, like, Mogo, who was a Green Lantern character, is kind of like the answer to that.
Yeah.
Who's Mogo is the, is a giant planet that gets a Green Lantern ring.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. Like, there's nothing else. He's a Green Lantern, but he's a living planet. So he kind of starts using the planet to his advantage, where he's like, he shoots Peter with like these energy beams and starts the process of hatching like all of these, the flower that we see in the beginning of the movie,
mm-hmm.
he starts hatching that flower and it starts taking over this entire town. Did you catch who was in that car that was flipped upwards?
No,
it's Peter Quill's grandpa from the first movie.
Yeah.
So when that thing stops, when they stop it for the first time and that like Ford Focus is tipped upwards, that was Peter Quill's.
Oh,
it was the same actor.
Oh, that was that guy.
I know the old couple was James Gunn's parents.
Yes. Yeah. Which was great. Like they showed them. I was like, that has to be somebody.
Yeah.
And I looked
at his parents.
Yeah. They took over the DQ.
They did.
I was like, no.
So
they're credited as like old man and his mistress.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Really creepy old man or weird old man.
Yeah. Creepy old man and his mistress.
Yeah.
So the guardians are here. Like Drax kicks the door open and then the fight is on.
Mm-hmm.
They rescue Peter. And I do like the line where Gamora, like he's beat up pretty good. And Gamora's like, see, I told you. And he was like, really? Now is the time for the I told you speech. Like, that's great. That's exactly what I need right now.
But this whole point, though, I mean, like, at this point, Ego is so in control. Like, he's just messing. Like, they're delaying the inevitable. And he's telling them. He's like,
it's an empire
why
thing.
Are you fighting? Like, there's you keep doing this, but I'm in control. And then he eventually unlocks the power of the plant. Like, he's capturing
he
all
what he can
with
do.
The trees. And the whole time, they never stood a chance. But he was just kind of entertaining
them. But they forgot one thing.
They
forgot Mantis.
Yeah. Which was great.
Which is the reason why
first Marvel character rendered entirely in Snapchat.
Which is like when they announced Mantis, I was like, man, you are mining that comic series for everything it is worth. There is a scene. So they go to Xandar briefly. So Rich Rider, Nova, is one of my top five favorite characters of all time. And there's a single, because all the Nova Corps are dead, right? They die in the first one. There's a single Nova ship on Xandar. And I was like, just do it. Just tell me that's who that is. And you will win me over for the rest of my life. And they don't tell you who it is. This is the one solitary ship. I was like, damn it. I spent some money on that first issue. And I don't know if it's worth anything anymore.
I think they may still do it.
I think they have to. Like he becomes a guardian at one point.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
There's the big fight ensues. They get to Yondu's like secondary ship. And they realize, like, we can't leave. Like, we have to fight this thing. So Rocket has some batteries left over, so he makes the bomb. They go down. They realize that the center of this planet is where they need to get to. And that will take, if they can get there.
When he was monologuing, he told us his whole story that he was a floating space brain, and then he made a core, and then, you know, a sub core, and then he made
the planet. So they have to get down there, and they have to take out this brain. You know, take out the destroy the brain.
Yeah,
and the only one small enough is Baby Groot,
of course. And I do like the line where he's like, Rocket's like, I can't get down there, and there's nobody small enough. He's like, well, there is somebody small enough. He's like, this planet,
and we're all
gonna die.
And we've seen Baby Groot's comprehension skills from the Yondu.
This is the teaser. Like this is that scene is the teaser, and it plays just as well.
It plays better because I really like how. They extended the joke.
Yes.
They did.
Because at first I was like, oh, he gave away the joke. Right. But they extended the joke where he goes around trying to find
tape.
And I loved how it was. I love the sound.
Yeah.
They really used a surround sound. Like, you can
feel, it was great.
You can hear him going behind you and around.
Right.
And it really added to the joke.
Yeah.
He
literally, like, is flying around asking for tape.
Yeah. I love jokes that are extended like that.
And then he asks him, did you ask Mantis? Yeah.
No, did you ask Nebula?
Or did you ask Nebula? And he's like, yeah.
He's like, did you ask Nebula? He's like, well, she was sitting next to Yondu. He's like, so you didn't ask her.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for that kind of humor that's just like dragged out like that, but so well written. You know, I love
it. I do like where he's
going.
He's to ask Drax, and he's like, yeah, scotch tape. Well, then why would you even say? Why would you? You don't have any. Why would you even say?
Scotch tape would work.
There's a scene that I thought of you immediately where it's earlier in the movie where. Star-Lord is sitting in the ship and he's sitting by himself with the earphones in, and it's like he's in like a little corner and like the ship is all around him, and I was like, looks like a Wes Anderson shot. Like, that was such an artsy little weird thing to put in that movie, and I was like, damn, probably.
Yeah.
Damn, that one.
Yeah, I mean, this is a good looking movie.
Yeah, absolutely. So the fight is on. Mm-hmm. So they're in the base of this thing, and they send Rocket, of course, is like, all right, you do this and this. What do you do? This one. No! So you get the whole thing.
Don't push the button.
Don't push the button.
Watch the trailer.
You've seen the trailer. So, you know, Groot is off trying to figure out where he's going to go.
Meanwhile, Ego's got them all dead to rights.
Yeah, and you think that they have a fighting chance because Mantis can put Ego to sleep. Mm-hmm. And she does that. So, like, they've got time. But then they realize, like, she gets hit by, like, something. And Drax, after she gets hit, he's like, Mantis, look out! Oh. Right. She's just knocked out. It's okay. So now they are screwed. Yeah. Like, you've got Nebula and Gamora are trying to do their thing. You've got everybody kind of split off, and they're not going to make it. Like, this is the Empire ending.
Yeah.
Where everybody's dead. Like, nobody can make it out of it. The universe is screwed. And then I'm trying to think. Yondu is being covered with rock, and there's a line earlier in the movie where he's just like, "I don't use my head to throw the arrow," and then all of a sudden he says, "You know, I use my heart." And then Star-Lord kind of steps up, and what is this song?
Is that chain? Is that when they were using
the chain? Yeah,
is that what it was?
They like, used it twice.
They did. Yeah. So this is the okay. Then yeah. And this is the like it's one of those songs where I would have never thought to put it
in an action sequence,
yeah. And it works.
It's good.
Perfectly. Yeah. Like Peter stands up, he fights off Ego, and then.
Who broke his Walkman, by the way. That's very important.
What a dick move.
During Brandy.
Yeah, during
Brandy.
One thing
to kill his mother, but...
Don't break the Walkman.
Yeah.
and not only broke the Walkman, but the mixtape was inside it.
It was inside. Mixtape Volume 2 was
just
inside.
Just a jerk.
What a jerk move.
So how'd they play the music the rest of the movie?
We'll get to that.
They talk about it.
Yeah.
Cloned it.
Yeah, the fight ensues. I mean,
how are we listening to the soundtrack during the movie? They broke it. There was only one.
In his head.
Yeah, it's in his head. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Nebula and Gamora get out. Drax and Mantis get on the ship. Rocket grabs. Groot gets the bomb and does it right, which he almost doesn't, which I did like that scene where he goes to push it, and he's like, oh, no, wait, and then goes the other way. And they all get out, and then this is the scene where they get to the ship, and... Gamora's like, where's Quill? And Rocket's just like, he's not gonna make it. We can't. We have to get out of here. And so I like the scene a lot where Gamora is leaving. Like, obviously, again, she loves him or she's into him, but she won't leave without him. Where Rocket has to shoot her.
Yeah. He'd rather lose one friend than two.
And then another scene
that was in record in stereo.
Well done.
Where Batista is up at the bridge of the ship. And he's screaming into the thing. And, you know, so before Rocket left, he gave Yondu, he's like, I got nothing. And he was like, I've got a space suit and a jump pack and like the rocket pack, which, again, I didn't talk about the sensitive nipples, but
yeah,
that was great. So he defeats Ego. Like, we have, Ego has been defeated. The bomb has gone off. Another great little special effect where, like, Ego's face kind of, like, caves in into, yeah, like, sand.
Yeah.
It was awesome looking. So he, Quill, or Yondu grabs Quill, and
Quill's about to die, basically, on this planet. But
he's not going to make it out. Like, there's no way for him to get out. So Yondu grabs him. They're shooting up into space. And then at the last possible second, he hits Quill with a spacesuit. Obviously, Yondu can't survive in space. We get a really, like, Chris Pratt kills it in this scene.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see Star-Lord have a lot of emotional beats,
right?
But the way he's yelling at Rooker
and Michael Rooker kills it.
Absolutely,
yeah,
he does. Yeah, it is those two dudes. It's those two dudes on a green screen, and it's just them, and they destroy that scene together.
Oh my gosh! You know who thought going into this movie would be this emotional?
Yeah. No,
there's like three or four different beats where it's like, geez.
Yeah, I agree completely.
And this is the biggest one, though. Absolutely. I mean, this is just huge.
So Yondu,
and what does he say? Like,
basically, like, I'm sorry that you're biological father died, but like I was your dad, like, yeah, I raised you. I like, that's why I never like let you leave.
Once he figured, right, so Yondu was tasked with finding these kids,
right?
And once he realized,
he kept bringing his offspring to the planet. That's why he was trading in children. And when he got to Pete, he kept them.
He realized what was happening.
He stopped.
Yeah, he didn't know.
And basically, he's like, I didn't turn you over because I realized what was up, and I decided that I would raise you rather than...
Right, and he says, he's like, he may have been your father, but he ain't your daddy.
Right.
Such a great delivery.
That's a good line.
Really,
like, that's a really good line.
It really was good.
So Yondu doesn't make it. Pete makes it to the ship. We get a really nice funeral sequence. You know, and of their... They're able to inject some levity from Star-Lord's perspective and Drax's perspective in that scene, but still keep it.
Yeah.
Keep the integrity of that scene.
I like the burial they gave him with all the like troll doll and all this stuff. Like, they all put a little part on.
Gave him so that the one that he puts down is the one that he takes from the eyebrow guy from the first one, which
gave
I
him a Ravager Viking
a
funeral.
Ravager Viking funeral.
And this is another emotional part, which, man, I didn't see coming at all.
Yeah, where all of the Ravengers show up. And
I forgot about that.
Say,
he'll never get the colors. Yeah. Right. He'll never get this.
So he gets the official Ravager.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is where we see Stallone, Ving Rhames,
Michelle Yeoh,
and somebody else.
Yeah.
Clear guy.
Whatever.
Like, whoever, like that.
Yeah.
Special effects. Yeah. It wasn't an
Diamond,
actor playing.
Diamond Dave.
His
name's Diamond Dave.
Alan Tudyk is probably,
Yeah, it's probably is him, because he is an actor. But man, when they give him the salute, and Stallone does that, that was another emotional part where I'm just like, holy cow, what are you doing?
So this is where you get the line from Gamora, where she's just like, it's just some unspoken thing. And Peter, and he does it, it's super subtle, gives her a little like nod and a wink, and like wraps her arm, like the thing. So I will say, Rich Rider and Gamora are a couple. I'm just gonna put that out there. Like, don't mess with it too much. So that's kind of how we wrap it up. There are five post credit sequences, and only one of them leads into something. So like the first one is Sean Gunn gets the. Oh, I guess we should say for our dear listener.
Yes,
Timmy.
Oh,
Tuzin.
This is. Yeah. Peace to resistance.
Yeah. Sean Gunn walks over to Star-Lord, and he was just like, look, this is what they're listening to music now on Earth with. We found it in some junker shop.
Yeah. It can hold 300 songs.
And he's 300? Just like, 300?
Yeah.
And he hands him a Zune.
Yes. And the theater, I about lost it. Did anyone else? I mean, you guys had to. Yeah.
Timmy Two Zunes was the first thing I thought of.
Yeah. Well, I just thought, how perfect. I mean, to have a big movie like this play into a running gag on the show.
Yeah, it was great.
I mean, when he hands him to that, and I was sitting next to Jason Weesey and Devin, his friend, who turned him out of the podcast, but so other, you know, two listeners of the show, and we just looked at each other like, oh my gosh, you're kidding me.
Even my wife was like, oh, your listeners are gonna love that.
Was great. That was a great move. So the second,
so now we know James Gunn is a listener of the show.
That has to be. Has to be.
That's surely what
that
means.
Was for us. That was a real
thanks.
Yeah.
James.
It'd be better if it was playing real spoilers is what it could have been. So the first one is Pete gives. Yeah, it's Sean Gunn trying to
Kraglin
get
is the character.
Kraglin, sorry.
Yeah.
Is trying to get the arrow to work since Pete gave him Yondu's arrow, and he stabs like Drax in the neck.
God, I'm like, did he stab him in the chest? I'm like,
probably one of his sensitive nipples.
Yeah, he's trying to whistle.
That's true. Yeah. He messes it up.
It's really funny, but he walks away.
Right. Like, the second one is This is the one that will
probably Thor's hammer, right?
Kind of. This is the one that I think is going to lead into Infinity War, where since the Sovereign, the characters that have lost every single time, the main, who I feel like I know that actress from something,
but I
don't know where
she
from.
She was really good in
the role. She was great. She was super
stoic.
Weird, but in a good way. It should have been weird.
She should have been Cate Blanchett. Like, she was playing a Cate Blanchett
role. They got Cate Blanchett
for something else.
I know. I'm just saying, like, she was in that level of, like...
She's very elegant.
Galadriel of Lord of the Rings. Like, that's why I'm saying Cate Blanchett, because she was that kind of character. Very stoic, very well-spoken.
I can't believe they put Hela in that actual costume for Thor the Dark World. Or for Thor Ragnarok. I am shocked that made it to the screen.
I love it.
I'm in. I'm just surprised. So, so she kind of says, I've made the perfect genetic thing, blah, blah. And they go to this big, like, tomb. And she's like, I'll call him Adam. And I was like, wait a minute. We saw Adam. This is the scene where I was like, but then who was in the cocoon? But if he's able to be reborn, it's possible that, who knows? Yeah. So
that's
Adam.
Adam Warlock
will be a major player somehow in Infinity War,
and because he has the last Infinity Stone,
correct?
So that's the thing, and so the theory going around.
In the books, he has a lot. I don't know what they're gonna do with the movies, but
the theory going around has been the Thanos theory that every letter corresponds to who has the Infinity Stone.
He's missing one,
and so there's one left. And
AW or his initials, Adam Warlock.
Adam Warlock was originally known as him.
Oh,
so that's the H in Thanos.
Yeah.
So that's the only one we were missing. So that theory, the Thanos theory, was correct. Yeah.
That actress is 6'3".
Is she really?
Yeah, I thought, I was like, she's really.
I just thought it was makeup.
She's some kind of supermodel, she's tall. And,
so then the third one is Teenage Groot, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
Where, like,
being all sullen.
Yeah, yeah. Quill walks in his room and it's all, it's not covered in trash. It's covered in, like, leaves and, bark.
Root.
Where he gets, like, he's being a teenager and he was like, I am Groot. He's like, I am not boring.
Yeah.
So I like how he can understand him now.
Now everybody can understand what he says.
And this, even more importantly, was to show that baby Groot was a one and done.
Yeah.
It was cute, not going to keep doing it. But he can't.
So now I don't know if we're going to get teenage Groot or adult Groot.
Because they're going to speed up. He has to be full size for Infinity War.
I would hope so.
You know what I mean? To be able to make a difference. So this was them showing, like, they're going to speed along and it will be 2018 or whatever. It will catch up. So
and
that was good.
The last post-credit sequence is we get the confirmation.
That was only three.
Right? So there's the Arrow.
Stanley's
Warlock,
the fourth, right?
Young Groot. Stan Lee as the Watcher.
So this is
which was a theory for a long time. Is like, because Stan Lee keeps showing up in all of these Marvel movies, he is the Watcher, and they confirm it.
Yeah. It's like
he is the Watcher.
Stalker. That was the second post-credit sequence. Stallone.
Right. Where Stallone kind of puts the Ravengers back together. The original Guardians is back together.
Yeah.
I don't know what that... That's going to play in a Volume 3, I have to believe. That's not...
Or it was a
they
nice
shot it was even... I love that they actually shot it like a team shot.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
And I was like, well, clearly this is a team.
It is a team.
It's like, it's Ving Rhames and Michelle Yeoh. So even if those are just like a one and done thing, the fact that they shot them and brought them in, like, they could have just gone with some no name people.
Which makes me think it's going to be a thing.
Like, legit people. So it's like who if they want to make it a thing, nobody's going to complain.
Correct.
And they say, who would have thought that it was Yondu that
Yondu
would bring us back together.
Right.
Yeah.
The original team.
That's it. The Guardians of the Galaxy will return.
From 75.
So, but he's...
And then Stan Lee.
And then, yeah,
so the Stan Lee thing, though, like, people are wondering, are those cameos just random? Or is it the same person in all of them? And isn't he telling the story?
I was a FedEx guy.
Yeah, right.
So that confirms it.
Yeah,
right
he was. And if anybody knows anything about the Watchers, like, they always show up when something...
So what are they going to do when Stan Lee dies? I know they filmed a bunch... Supposedly they brought him in and filmed like four or five cameos.
Yeah,
so they'd have him in the can. But like,
you could just turn him into a Watcher. Yeah. You could get rid of the. Stanley.
I mean, I think they'll have to whatever movie post movie will
somewhere,
be.
I bet they filmed
somewhere. Jim Shooter is maniacally rubbing his hands together.
Yes,
never gonna happen.
I know.
Based on, you know, he wants to happen. If you read the
Marvel comics, the untold story, Jim Shooter of all the sort of vitriol that's thrown back and forth between everybody. Collectively,
it all goes to him.
Yeah. Right.
I would guess that of those five, one is a final scene, and we'll have to see if we get five or we'll get two final one or three. One of them, I'm sure, is an explanation.
Hopefully.
Wrap it up somehow.
Although that's kind of me like, hey, we're going to have you film this last one because you're 94.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I bet he gets it, though. I mean,
he does. He's a storyteller.
Or he is has to retire at some point.
He's going to want to go out on a good note.
Exactly. Absolutely. So. I'm interested where he shows up in Spider-Man. That's the one. Yeah.
So, Dan, do you have a video recovery?
I do, yeah. So I was trying to think of a movie that's sort of reminiscent of the comedy and the more of a space adventure. And for some reason, I don't know why, I thought of the 1984 movie, The Ice Pirates.
I remember Ice Pirates.
Robert Urich and Bing Crosby's daughter. Was it Mary Crosby? She shot JR. Yeah. Spoiler. Anyway, and a very young Ron Perlman.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
He's still super weird looking.
Well, he just looks like a baby.
He's super
and
baby.
It is a. It's set in the far distant future where water has run out. So these, the water is the only resource that matters anymore. And these pirates go around and try to steal giant blocks of ice from freighters. There's not a lot of story here. In fact, it's so funny because it's like, this came out in 84 and the effects are so, so bad that you would have thought it come out pre Star Wars.
Oh, right on.
So this sort of came out in the fallow period after Return of the Jedi. And then there was a whole lot of space operas. Yeah.
The funny thing is, looking at the poster though, it looks like it belongs in this genre. Like it looks
totally,
like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Thematically, this is like very similar, except for just terrible.
Right.
It's not good. But this is like in 1984. This was the Guardians of the Galaxy kind of movie that just didn't do well.
James Gunn like must have seen this movie at some point.
It's thematically along that line. Yeah. Yeah. And it feels like it's in its core, it's what this is. I mean, these are pirates in space.
And there's a woman pirate. And so it proves our theory.
Yeah. And it's funny because what they did was basically. The spaceships are just like industrial offices. Like literally they shot this at factories. And there's one scene where a bad guy's running up to a second tier and he's literally just running on. He's climbing up a ladder, like a 40-foot ladder extended, like a ladder, like an aluminum ladder.
Like
and it's kind of wobbly.
Like a Home Depot
ladder. I'm like, they didn't even try to make that look like a set. They literally have a guy running up a ladder. And then the pirate part is that they've got a bunch of people running around in just wardrobe from a sword and sorcery epic. So there's knights and pirates. Like there's no attempt to make these to mesh these together. I mean it's like we got these sets here and then we've got I've got a warehouse full of pirate and pirate stuff for the good guys and knights armor for the bad guys and it's just a. It's a mishmash of things that doesn't quite work, but it is, I think an influence probably. Not as much as I think Flash Gordon
was a major influence on
James Gunn. He's admitted it, especially visually.
There's a lot.
The Sovereigns are totally out of Flash Gordon, the Merciless's palace. But if you want to see something just give you a laugh and of the time, see 84's Ice Pirates.
Cool. Well, thank you, Dan.
Thanks.
So I guess that's it for this episode. Let's go around the table and everybody can say where to find them.
This is Dan. You can find me on Twitter at DanGraney67, GRANEY.
This is Joe. You can also follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBrackett and at ReviewSTL.com.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Don't forget, if you would like to continue the conversation online, you can find us at Facebook.com/RealSpoilers or on Twitter at RealSpoilers, or you can join the League of Show Sharers Facebook group, which is called League of Show Sharers. It's very pretty
well
creative.
Done.
Yeah, why make it hard? Also, don't forget, you can go to our website, realspoilers.com. Go to iTunes, rate, review, subscribe. It helps us tremendously, and we greatly appreciate it. Also, new feature, you can now review us on Facebook as well. So if you've already reviewed us on iTunes and you're just longing for a second opportunity, you can grab the glory days of when you left your iTunes review.
And if you leave it, if there's something there, we'll read it as well.
You can re-review us.
Yeah.
Maybe, how have we held up?
Yeah. Maybe your opinion has changed. So it would make sense if it had.
Mm-hmm.
Mine has. You can decide if that's good or bad. So anyway, that's it for this week. I guess next week is what? King Arthur?
King Arthur, yeah.
That will be the movie day, whatever week means in French.
Jour?
Well, that's day. That's of the day.
That's true, yeah.
So,
movie of the week.
Day seven, Jours.
No, God, no.
But we record on one day, so we usually just go with movie
But it's
jour.
Movie of the week, so it's like we do one a week.
Okay. Figure it out, Kevin.
Yeah, so, anyway, that's what we're doing. So, thanks for tuning in. Until next time, Max has two toes amputated.
There's a road I'd like to tell you about. Lives in my hometown. Lakeshore Drive and Road is calling. Down from rats on up to riches, 15 minutes you can fly. Pretty blue lights along the way help you ride on by. Pretty blue lights shining with a heavenly grace help you ride on by. And there ain't no road just like it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Sitting in the town, just slipping on by with real spoilers, finding that trouble bound.